So the agenda for today is very simple. I'm going to lead you through a meditation, and this is one of the most powerful meditation techniques that I know about. It's called the Wheel of Awareness, developed by the amazing Dr. Dan Siegel. Dr. Dan Siegel is the author of this fantastic book right here. Ta-da! Aware. The Science and Practice of Presence. And this is a life-changing book. It's a culmination of his work, and guy's amazing, and he's developed a lot of different things. My introduction to the work of Dan Siegel was with his book, Mind Sight. And it also got me started on my serious book reading kick. So I highly recommend that you get yourselves a hold of the work of Dan Siegel, whether online on his YouTube videos or through one of his books. So today we're going to go through the Wheel of Awareness meditation. And I'll take a couple more minutes to let people roll in here. Welcome, folks. Welcome, Usman. Welcome, Rachna. Welcome, all my friends who are here on Facebook. So in about a minute or so, I'm going to start the meditation. And welcome, Taryn. Welcome, everybody who's coming in. Let's see, in the chat here. Oh, Matt is from the south coast of England. It is eventide over there. So welcome. All right, make sure I have everybody muted. Everybody's muted. All right, actually, you know what? To begin, I'm just going to mute everybody and say hi. Hi, everybody. Welcome. Great to have you here. Okay.
Hi.
Good to hear your voice. We are going to mute it all. Okay, fantastic. So it's around 11:02. Let's begin with the Wheel of Awareness meditation. And if you're not familiar with this, this has four portions to it, and each one is slightly different. And for that, I'm going to be giving you exact instructions on what to do and where to direct your attention and what to visualize. So we can begin by taking a deep breath and closing our eyes. And imagine that you are sitting at the hub of a wheel. So you're at the center, and around you is this big old circle, a wheel, and it's divided into quadrants. And each of the quadrants corresponds to a certain aspect of your consciousness. And we are going to attend to each one of those in turn over the next 15 minutes or so. We begin by attending to your five senses. So close your eyes and start to pay attention to the sounds in your environment. Become very, very quiet and notice all the sounds that there are in your environment. Could be cars outside, could be the rustling of leaves. If you're in a very quiet room, it could be the sound of your own breath. And if you're in a very, very quiet room, it could be the sound of your own heart's beating. But just take a minute or two to attend to everything in your environment that is sound. Maybe it's a sound of your own breath. And obviously, the sound of me speaking through these speakers on your phone, on your computer, earphones. Take in all the sounds in the environment. And as you do that, we're going to move on to the next sense, your sense of vision. You're welcome to do this with your eyes closed or with your eyes open. I find it's easier to do with your eyes closed. As you just pay attention to the sensation of light on your eyes, even with your eyelids closed, and the various shades and colors there are. Bring your attention to all the stimulus you're receiving through your eyes only. attend to all the visual stimulus to the exclusion of all the other stuff. Notice the things you hadn't noticed before. Notice the richness of what is happening right now. Notice all the detail. Give your attention fully to what's coming in through your eyeballs. As we do that, we're going to move on to the next sense. The next sense is your sense of touch. And right now, maybe your hands are touching in this meditation, or maybe they are on your legs. Or maybe you can feel the sensation of your clothes on your body, or your hair on your shoulders, or the sensation of your body sitting on the chair, the particular weight of it. Maybe you can become aware of the feeling of socks or shoes on your feet. Allow yourself to become aware of these sensations that you may not have noticed before. All through your body, where are you feeling touch? Allow yourself to focus your attention on that. As we move along to the next sense, the sense of smell. And go ahead and put all of your attention on the air coming through your nostrils. Account for all of the smells that you can sense in your environment now. Maybe there are some smells that you hadn't noticed before. Maybe there's just the smell of clean, clear air. And maybe by placing your attention on smell, you can actually feel the insides of your nose. Become aware of the olfactory epithelium, the apparatus of smelling that's always been there, but you hadn't really noticed before. As the molecules of air and smell all the aromas in the environment land on the olfactory epithelium, the smelling apparatus, and you become more aware of that. As we move along to the next sense, the sense of taste. If you just had something to eat, maybe you can notice that there's a residue of that thing that you ate. Or maybe you haven't eaten in a while, and there's that baseline taste that you have in your mouth that you hadn't really paid attention to. Because it's not nothing, it's something. Allow your attention to engulf that sensation fully. Bring your attention to that. Fully taste whatever it is you are tasting right now. And from there, we move on to the next quadrant. The next quadrant is your internal sensations. We are going to scan your body from the feet upwards and notice what it is that you're feeling on the inside. Starting with the very tips of your toes. Perhaps you'll have a little bit of tingling down there, especially as blood tends to pool in the lower part of our bodies as we're sitting down or standing up. Notice that sensation. Maybe there's a little feeling of fullness there, the blood in your veins. You can become aware of the sensation of muscles, small muscles of your feet. Moving up to your calves and your shins. Perhaps you can even become aware of the feeling inside your bones, deep inside your muscles. How does it feel? Is there warmth? Is there coolness? Is there some twitching, some movement? Whatever it is, allow yourself to attend to that fully. As you move the scan up to your knees, what do your knees feel like right now? What's going on there? Is there pain? Is there creakiness? Or is there just this feeling of there's a knee? Moving on up to your thighs, the big muscles of your body, quadriceps up front, your buttocks, hamstrings in the back. And go ahead and pay attention to the internal feelings there. What does that feel like? What's going on there if you were to make everything else super silent, super quiet, and just pay attention to what's going on inside your thigh muscles, your hamstrings, your gluteus maximus muscle, all the veins, all the arteries there. Maybe you exercised earlier today and there's some soreness or burning there. Or maybe you stretch and you have a feeling of expansion. Moving on up to the area of your pelvis and genitals. What's going on there? Take note of any particular feelings you have there. There's a lot of organs in there, a lot of blood, a lot of veins, a lot of nerves. So with each breath that you take, go ahead and place your focus on this area, your pelvis and genitals. Comfort, discomfort, cold, heat, tingliness, absence of tingliness, whatever it is, just take note of it. Acknowledge it. Notice that there are sensations there all the time. And now that you place your focus on it, you can feel them. As you move on up to your abdomen and your lower torso, the muscles of your back, the abdominal muscles, lower abdominal, upper abdominals, and then inside your viscera, intestines, internal organs. Go ahead and really feel what's going on in there. Pay attention to the movement. Pay attention to the baseline feeling. Maybe you ate recently. Maybe you've been experiencing some hardship and some of that manifests in this area of your body. Perhaps there's tightness. Maybe there's ease, heat, movement, whatever it is, notice it without judgment. Just feel what's going on. As you move the scan up, the area of your chest and upper back. Once again, allow yourself to feel everything that's going on. Notice what's happening with each breath that you take. The slight stretching sensation you get in your back and your chest. Maybe the expansion of your diaphragm as you inhale. As you do that, allow your attention to fall upon what's actually happening. And then move your attention up to the area of your neck and your head. All the sensations in there. Maybe some of them are uncomfortable sensations, challenging sensations. Is there tightness in your neck muscles and your shoulders? Let's remember the arms too. All the way down your shoulders, biceps and triceps, down to your forearm and to your fingertips. Feel it all. As we complete the body scan, having given our attention to all the different parts of our insides, parts that were always alive and moving and feeling. And now you're more aware of what was going on there. As we move on to the third quadrant, the third quadrant deals with your thoughts and feelings. Imagine that you have a screen. Your mind is like a TV screen, and thoughts are coming in and projecting themselves on this TV screen. The TV screen itself does not change, but it gladly accepts the projections. Notice where these thoughts come from. Be curious about them. Where do they originate? And there's no effort required. The thoughts will come. This is what the mind does. It generates thoughts. What we're doing in this quadrant is we're taking one step back and looking at the thoughts. Become curious about them. Perhaps some of these thoughts are troubling about the future and uncertainty, or friends who are in pain. Maybe there's suffering. Maybe there's joy. Whatever the thoughts are, go ahead and notice how they enter your consciousness. Notice how they dwell in your consciousness, how they stick around and play on the screen of your consciousness. And then notice how they leave. No thought lingers forever. All thoughts and emotions are temporary. And become curious about this process as the thoughts enter. Stick around and make their exit. Stand there, taking one step back. Identifying yourself with the screen and not the thoughts themselves. It's like they come in like a ping pong ball, boop, they hit your consciousness, and they keep on moving. Your mind is the ping pong table. Your mind is the TV screen. Go ahead and do that for a few more moments now. Notice the thoughts that come in. And perhaps in this zone, those thoughts that come in aren't nearly as daunting as they were before. Maybe thoughts that were challenging are more manageable now. Just by taking this little step back and noticing that they are just thoughts. They're just the programming on the TV screen. They are not the TV screen itself. You are the screen. And from there, we go to the fourth quadrant. The fourth quadrant is consciousness itself. And I invite you to turn your attention onto the screen of consciousness. So if each of these meditations were an arrow from the hub of consciousness pointing at one of the aspects of consciousness. We started with the five senses, went to internal sensations, and went to thoughts. Now you're turning that arrow of consciousness back upon itself. You are becoming conscious of consciousness. You are putting your awareness upon awareness. And as you do that, you may experience a certain clarity, a certain calm, a certain quieting of everything. As you become aware of awareness, you can feel at a very deep level the expansiveness of your consciousness. The true silence of being aware of awareness. Go ahead and focus on that, turning your awareness upon awareness for the next minute or so. Really bask in that quiet expansiveness, in that absolute silence. And notice how easy it is to do so after you have put your focus on other things. Quadrant one, sensations. Quadrant two, inner feelings. Quadrant three, thoughts and feelings. Quadrant four, turn it back on itself. As you do this, you may feel an inkling of enlightenment even. Maybe this is what it feels like. As you reside in this space of expansiveness, of quiet. This unsullied screen of your consciousness for another minute or so. And gradually come back to the present time and place. And close the meditation with an expression of gratitude. Gratitude for having the time and space to do this meditation. Having the health and presence of mind to be able to go through the various steps. And make this meditation a gift to the world. This is your gift, because as you do the Wheel of Awareness meditation and you build upon your expansive consciousness and build upon your equanimity, this radiates out to all the people who are connected to you. And it also gives them greater equanimity, greater peace, greater freedom from suffering. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Express your gratitude however you're comfortable. And there we go. That took about 17 minutes or so. And one of the reasons why I really like this meditation is that it's a combination of some of the most powerful meditations you can do. So I like doing a focus meditation, and when you're going through the five senses, that's a form of focused meditation. You're turning your focus to various sensory inputs, and that narrows your consciousness. And focusing is one of the prime skills of adulthood. And if you can't focus on stuff, you're never going to get anything done. So that's super important and really powerful, because then that means you can direct your mind where you want it to go. And that's super key. The second part is the feeling one. So that's more of an open awareness meditation. And the first part actually does have some open awareness in that too. And that's about becoming open to sensation and to feeling things, to notice what's going on. And the third one is about thinking and being able to see thoughts and take a step back from them such that you're in a meta position to them. So that's practicing metacognition. And then finally, the fourth quadrant, that's huge. You're actually paying attention to attention. You're giving awareness to awareness. And that is the big payoff right there. And the more you do that, the greater the fruits of your meditation practice. And the more you're able to really identify with your consciousness as opposed to the thoughts and feelings that come through it. The more you do that, the more you're going to be able to identify with the screen. I use that screen metaphor, the TV screen metaphor, because you can have zombies on there, you can have Taylor Swift on there, you can have, I don't know, Masked Singer on that screen, but that doesn't change the TV. The TV remains the TV. Whatever is on there, the TV remains unsullied, and such is the same with your consciousness. Okay, good. Great to have everybody on here. On Facebook Live, on Zoom. If you have questions, now's a good time to ask them before I go into the lecture part of today's session. How y'all doing? Good? Let me unmute everybody. How did that meditation feel, folks? How was it for you?
It was good for me.
Good meditation, all right. A little different from what you're used to.
Well, I think we all have to take a moment like this to really be a grateful and appreciative of where we are.
Gratitude and appreciation. Yes, absolutely. Very powerful. And also, this is mind training. So I say these sessions that I do with you guys, it's like personal training for your brain. I am here to train your brain. And for a little while, you're going to experience some cool things. At the same time, will one training session make you fit? Probably not. So it's still on you to go out there and train and exercise and to become fit, mentally fit. And these are some of the ways you can do it. So the Wheel of Awareness exercise, obviously you just did it with me, and I will endeavor to post this later on so you have it. And Dan Siegel has many videos on YouTube where he leads it himself. So I recommend you check it out with him as he does it. He has short versions, he has super long versions. Go for the super long. The deeper you go, the more powerful this tends to get. And also note what happens if you keep on doing this. If you keep on doing this, you're going to become so much more attentive to your own feelings. Instead of, say, pushing them away, you are now leaning into the feelings. You're actually feeling them. And that's the best way to allow them to dissipate, by actually feeling them. You become more aware of your own thoughts and you're able to step back from them. And you're also practicing basically what is the practice of enlightenment. The way you get there is by becoming aware of awareness, by just really anchoring in the now, in the I am, which is what you do when you turn that arrow of awareness back upon itself. So, cool beans. Glad you guys like it. If you have questions, please zap them to me. In the meantime, I'd like to start with a little story about unhappiness. So, this friend of mine is an entrepreneur, and he's doing very well. In fact, his company just recently broke $1 billion in valuation. So in San Francisco, where I used to live, they call that a unicorn company. Boom, it broke the $1 billion valuation, and that is supposed to be awesome. And in many ways, it is. And he's creating a great product for the world. But at the same time, he's very busy, and he was traveling a lot before this lockdown happened, and he was traveling so much that it really disrupted his sleep patterns. And it was also very difficult to get in touch with him and also hang out with him. And also, he was eating irregularly because he's traveling all the time and he's a little stressed out. So it was catch as catch can, eat something, maybe junk food, maybe not so great. And at the same time, he wasn't able to really sustain a relationship with with his fiance. And it's possible that they weren't really right for each other anyway, but that also fell apart. And then finally what happened was that because of all the stress and all the travel and all these different things, he actually got a pretty serious disease. And he was laid up for a little while. And, you know, this is kind of the disease that could be life-threatening. luckily, he made it through. And here's the thing. Here's a guy who is already reasonably affluent, right? And his company, if that makes it, I mean, whether or not he makes it, he's still going to be affluent. But if the company does make it, then he's going to be super affluent. So he's got a car. He's got a roof over his head. He's got friends. He's got unlimited access to food. And I mention these seemingly trivial things because even 100 years ago, these are not guarantees, right? And 100,000 years ago, you had to go out and forage and hunt for your food. So this is pretty cool. We live in these extraordinary privileged times, right? And yet, in spite of all this stuff, it suddenly hit me one day that he was not in thriving mode. He was not behaving as if he was incredibly affluent, which we all are. If you are right now sitting in front of a computer that has Zoom and that can transmit over the internet via broadband connection, you are super duper affluent. You are in the top 0.01% of affluent people in the history of the world. You're doing pretty well. You're not a cave. You don't have saber-toothed cats running you down. You don't have neighboring tribes coming down trying to spear you and steal your women and children. And you don't have to go and hunt for forage for berries every day. We're doing pretty well. Hey, we even have vaccines. Pretty cool, huh? And what I realized was that even though he was a hyper-affluent individual, his mind was in survival mode. And he was always using metaphors like, oh my God, I'm underwater. Oh my God, I'm under siege. Oh my God, I'm under fire. I got to put out these fires. Everything was about survival. So it is possible to be incredibly successful, incredibly affluent, and yet your body and your mind still thinks you're in survival mode. At the same time, it is possible to actually have things out there trying to kill you and not be in survival mode. In the same way that you can create a story inside your mind that, oh my God, I'm about to die, even though nothing is actually threatening your life, even though you have, you know, thousands of dollars in the bank and you're doing pretty well. In the same way, you can imagine that there's stuff out there trying to kill you and not feel that. And I'm here to tell you today that stuff has always been out there trying to kill you. This whole coronavirus thing is not new. Every day there are billions of pathogens right outside your body trying to get in and kill you. Quite literally, okay? And every day you wake up and you're like, oh, look at that, I'm alive. But do you? Do you actually think that? Are you grateful every day that you have this astonishing thing called your immune system keeping you alive? And I want to give you a little idea of how astonishing this immune system is, okay? So there are literally billions of potential pathogens out there, okay? And these are very small things like viruses and bacteria. And the only way that your immune system can recognize them is by actually having contact with these things, right? So you have receptors on your white blood cells, and you have these antigens on the bad guys, and it has to actually bump into it and recognize it, okay? And think about it as a lock and a key. So you have these locks floating around in the form of bacteria and viruses. And only if your white blood cell has the right key to that lock can it actually interact with that bacterium or virus pathogen and do something about it. Now let's think about that. I just told you there are billions and billions of potential pathogens out there, okay? So that means you need to have billions and billions of unique white blood cells who can recognize that particular pathogen. How does that work? Do you have like a key factory that's constantly cranking these out and cranking out different ones? You already have them all? Or does like the bug come into your body and you have a committee like, oh, I think it looks like this. Let's make the key for that. Like a locksmith who makes keys for you. Because let's think about this. You got 3 billion base pairs that make up your DNA. That's it, 3 billion, okay? If you need billions and billions of white blood cells that are unique, that you need to recognize all the pathogens coming in, how does that work? That is crazy talk. You just ran out of DNA just to make your immune system. This makes no sense. How about legs? How about your brain? How about kidneys? How do you code for that? Turns out your immune system is this unbelievably elegant, tricky, masterful thing that takes certain stretches of your DNA and shuffles them around like a bunch of cards, and then has these combinations, which are basically like hands in a poker, like a poker hand. And then that way you get basically an infinite number of these. And your body actually manufactures billions of different white blood cells to recognize the billions of different pathogens that can potentially attack you. And it's doing this every single day of your life. So think about that. Think about the foresight, the elegance, and the insane effectiveness of this. If you are alive, it's kind of a ridiculous miracle, because that means you survived trillions upon trillions of attacks on your body. Okay, literally trillions. Your immune system has been working astonishingly well. And every once in a while, maybe you got sick and like, oh, I feel sick, but you didn't die. If you're here on this call, that is proof positive that you did not die. Your immune system worked. So a big thank you to our immune systems for all the service it's been doing. Because look, none of us are guaranteed tomorrow. There is no guarantee of your next heartbeat. How does it work? Are you doing it? You're not in charge. There's no guarantee of your next breath. How do you breathe when you're asleep? Our essential quality in life is that of groundlessness. You have no clue what's going to happen next. And what's happened with this whole COVID-19 coronavirus lockdown thing is suddenly this has come to the fore. Now you've just become more aware of it because it's real. Because you see on Facebook, 8 of your friends got sick. 8 of my friends have gotten sick. Two of those friends have had friends who've passed away. This is super real now. But death is not exactly news, is it? There's one thing that is absolutely true that I'm going to say to you today is that you are going to die, and so am I. We're all going to croak, okay? The question is, when? And suddenly with this virus thing, it's brought it up to much more tangible, much more real, just because the deadline got shifted forward, right? So we just did a meditation for about 17 minutes, during which this stuff was not on your mind. I'm thinking it wasn't on your mind. It wasn't on my mind. And where did all these concerns go? Where did that fear of disease and death and destruction go? Where was it? And the answer is that it was already out there, and you decided to not let it into your consciousness. Before all this happened, there was already death, destruction, and disease. There are people in refugee camps who are basically under daily threat, have little access to clean food. There's places where there's wars going on. So you have the Rohingya, say, in Myanmar, whose lives are under daily threat, and they're in refugee camps, they're being massacred. All this stuff has been going on. So you were already choosing not to have a lot of that in your consciousness. Now it's real. Now it's hitting you. Now it's personal. So now you're starting to pay attention. So I'm not encouraging you to adopt a state of ignorance and to just let all this stuff go and just do your meditation. It is possible to be aware and also in a state of equanimity at the same time. In fact, I would argue that that state of equanimity, that ability to feel the peace in the midst of the turmoil, is what makes you the most effective agent for doing something about the turmoil. And the more you do this meditation, the more you are able to anchor yourself in the now, the more you're able to anchor yourself in your most powerful self, your most conscious self, the more you're able to be of service to the world. And I think that's a pretty important thing, because 10 years from now, you're going to ask yourself, forget about what other people think, you're going to ask yourself, what did I do during the crisis? How was I an instrument of empowerment and joy and succor to the world? How was I able to empower other people, lift them up, and do my part? Because wherever you are, no matter how cooped up in your home you think you are, there's something you can do. So I figured out that this is part of what I can do. I can talk to you guys, perhaps allow you to manage your emotions better and feel some notion of peace. And that would allow you to go out there and be a better version of you. In the end, as far as I can tell, on this earth, we have one purpose, and that is to give our gift. I don't know what your particular gift is, But my guess is that that gift has not been fully exploited yet. You have not fully flourished that gift and your ability to give that to the world. So perhaps this time, when maybe some of us are going to work a little bit less, maybe you have a little more downtime, maybe this is the time to awaken those gifts and nurture them. Maybe it's the time to bring those projects from the back burner you always want to do and start to do them. Maybe it's time to reach out to friends you haven't reached out in a while. Maybe it's time to build something you've always wanted to build. So some wise person said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And maybe this is the time to take advantage of this crisis that's happening right now. Okay, so that's my big thought for the day. In the meantime, I'd like to also give you some more techniques to process and reprocess emotions, okay? And this was pretty useful in the last session. Somebody had a question, we did it. So please share with me here in the chat here, if you're having difficulty with something, if you're having emotions that are perhaps challenging, it could be grief, it could be fear, it could be uncertainty, it could be, you know, your salary got cut off and you don't know where your next paycheck is going to come from. It could be you have friends whom you love dearly and who are suffering and they're in pain, or maybe some of them already passed away. I don't know where it is, but whatever it is, let me know what's going on with you. And we're going to use that as an example. So yesterday I used an example of my own, but if you have one, that's even better. So if you have an example of a challenging emotion that you'd like to get better at dealing with, let me know and we'll use that. Otherwise, I'll use my own. And I think all of us are experiencing some degree of grief, some degree of fear, because this is real and this is knocking on all of our doors. Okay, we have grief and isolation. That's a good one. All right, let's go with grief. Grief is a universal human emotion. And if you're not feeling it today, you will feel it at some point in the near future, because we've all got parents and relatives and pets and the natural order of things that they're going to die before we do. So some loved ones are going to leave. And what do you do with that? So to those of you who are feeling grief right now, or whatever other challenging emotion you're feeling right now, I'm going to ask you to stand up. We're going to do this together. This will be fun. I'm going to give you some unusual instructions that you've probably never heard before, and that's totally cool. Let me see if I can pull this up here so you can actually see me. All right, there you go. Hello, Facebook Live. Hello, Zoom. Let's deal with some challenging emotions, shall we? Okay, good. So Echo said grief and isolation. So let's go with grief. Maybe we can do isolation after that. So grief. Take a deep breath and close your eyes. And I invite you to pay attention to this feeling of grief and notice where it is. Notice where it is in your body. So go ahead and take a few deep breaths and allow that grief to really permeate itself into your body. So maybe before you were not thinking about it, but now you are thinking about it. And now you're like, oh yeah, grief. So I'm thinking about the pet I lost. I'm thinking about grandma. I'm like, ooh, yeah, that. And pay attention to where you feel that emotion. Where in your body do you feel it? Maybe point to it and put your hand on it. So I feel grief over here and maybe here. So upper torso and coming in down to the belly. And the crazy thing is scientists have actually mapped where we feel emotions. If you look that up, it's pretty fun to check out. But what is true for you is what's happening right now. Where are you feeling that grief? Okay. And also notice, what is the color of that emotion? So that may seem like an unusual request, but everybody comes up with some color when you ask, what color is that emotion? So for me, grief is like this dark gray stuff, this dark gray cloud that's like over here and maybe down a couple of inches and up into my chest, and belly. Okay, good. So now that you have a handle on it, maybe you're feeling a good like 20, 30% of that grief. Not the full blown, I don't want you to break down crying in the middle of it, but you're welcome to do that if you want. What I invite you to do is to take a few deep breaths. And as you take these deep breaths, what you're doing is you're gathering all the grief, all that emotion, whatever the target emotion is. You're gathering it all right here in the center of your body, right here in your solar plexus, right here. So here we go. We're gonna take five breaths together during which we concentrate this emotion in this spot right here. So here we go. Breathe it in. Concentrate right here. Gather it. And then as you breathe out, I want you to imagine you're compacting it like a trash compactor. You're squeezing it in, so you're making it denser. So once again, breathe in deeply and bring in all the emotion from everywhere it is in your body. Imagine you have this little whirlwind right here that's gathering up the tiny little bits of challenging emotion, wherever they reside, wherever they're hiding in your body. Breathe in here. Compact. Squeeze it in. Let's go for number three. Breathe it in. Visualize all that color all through your body, and then bring it in here and squeeze it in as you breathe out. Once again, breathe it in. Breathe in. Gather it. Compact it. Breathe it in, compact it. And what we're gonna do on the next breath, what we're gonna do is you're gonna breathe it all in again, and you're gonna push it out of your body. Push it out like a foot or two outside your body and just watch it. Watch that ball of compacted grief or isolation or frustration or whatever it is. See that ball right there, okay? And notice how it's there. It's spinning maybe, whatever it's doing, okay? What I want you to do is to step back and pretend like you have a tennis racket in your hand, just like the days when you used to be able to play tennis outside. Yeah, okay, good. And pull it back. And what I want you to do is to give this little ball of grief or isolation or whatever it is the hardest, biggest backhand you've ever given. So pull it back and go, and then watch it. Watch it go wee over the horizon, vanish into a little flash of light. Whew. And notice how you feel as you do that. And maybe your shoulders got a little bit lighter. Maybe your neck's a little easier to move around. Whatever it is, just feel that. And if that felt good, guess what? You can do it again. Once again, gather up all the emotion. Bring it up here. Push it out right here. Let it hover. Pull back and go. And there it is, all the way out in the horizon, vanished. Now, if someone you love actually passed away, this probably won't bring him back. However, this may make the emotion of grief a lot more manageable. And some people say you're supposed to grieve for like 6 months, a year, 2 months, half of the length of a relationship, but suffering is always optional. You are allowed to feel the pain. You are allowed to feel the loss, but you don't have to suffer. And suffering does not necessarily make you a greater instrument for good in the world. So when you do this kind of thing, it reduces the suffering that you experience. So the example I used yesterday was that every time I watch Trump on TV give a press conference, that's when I get a lot of negative emotions, a lot of challenging emotions, and you know, a mixture of frustration and rage and anger at the right time for the right reason, in the right intensity, at the right person is actually a pretty constructive thing, and it's very useful. And all emotions are useful. All emotions are there for us to survive. There are no real negative emotions per se. Some of them are more comfortable than others. So, you know, joy is great, but like isolation doesn't feel so good. But emotions are all signals to your body, mind, telling you to take action. You think about it, the word motion is an emotion. So E is like X, it's out, motion. So it's all about you moving out. It's all about you taking action, doing something in order to increase your chances of survival. So all emotions are good. However, if you wallow in them, if you just keep on having these potentially destructive emotions for a long time, it can compromise your immune system. It can bring you down. It can bring people around you down. It just makes you much less effective as a person. So that tool you can use anytime you want. It just took a couple of minutes. You can use it for any emotion you want to manage, and it will make it more manageable. And you're doing a bunch of crazy things that maybe you've never done before. You are assigning a color to an emotion. You're connecting your breath to that emotion. You're gathering it around your compact. You're sending it off. Why should this even work? I don't know, but this shit works. So I learned this through hypnotherapy and neurolinguistic programming. And these techniques work. And actually, they have precedent in a lot of techniques that have been around for thousands of years. So in various Buddhist traditions, especially Tibetan Buddhist tradition, they have similar kinds of meditations. One is called Tonglen. And I'm going to do that in one of the future sessions again. I think I did in session 2 or 3. Tonglen is super powerful, but you're doing the same thing. What you're doing is you're breathing in the pain of somebody else in the form of, you know, dark black smoke. You're bringing it into your body, you're feeling that pain, and then you're sending it out into the world as bright white light. And you're reprocessing emotion in a way that makes it much more manageable and potentially affects all the people that you're doing the meditation for. Because anytime you liberate yourself, anytime you make yourself a focus, a center point of equanimity, of peace, that reverberates out through your network of people. And it has second, third, fourth order effects. People out there who don't even know you will feel it. You think this is a bunch of voodoo nonsense? Well, Nick Christakis and James Fowler, they've written an entire book about it called Connected, about how this is exactly what happens. You quit smoking, the chance of your friends quitting smoking goes whoop, way up. You gain weight, the chance of your friends gaining weight and your friends of friends who don't even know you goes up. So in the same way, you increase the joy in your life. You increase the peace in your life, guess what? The chance of your friends around you increasing their peace and joy goes way up too. So as I've said before, and I'll say again, managing your own happiness, making yourself happier and more joyful and more of your flourishing, thriving self is the most altruistic thing you can do, because it propagates through your network and then through the world and allows other people to experience that too. So great. So thank you. For your attention so far. What questions do you have? Questions are good. And these are practices that you can incorporate into your life. These are not necessarily things that you just come on to this one-off call and you listen to me and I walk you through them. Why shouldn't you do that little ball exercise all the time? Why should you not do the wheel of awareness all the time? And what's tricky about these things is to integrate them into your life. So what I recommend that you do is you set aside time every day to meditate, to manage your emotions, put on your calendar, or just say, hey, this is the first thing I do after I get out of the shower, after I exercise. That way it becomes a regular practice. And another thing you can do is you can join a group of people who are into this kind of thing and create a cohort such that you hold each other accountable, such that you do this. And I'm creating this in the form of my happiness engineering course. So this will be 3 months during which I'll be teaching you all this stuff and how to incorporate it into your life and to apply it to 5 aspects of your being, namely relationships. So you want to have robust relationships. You want to have meaningful work. You want to have sound sleep. You want to have mental fitness and physical fitness. In these calls, I'm mostly focusing on mental fitness because it's called staying sane in trying times, because that seems to be the thing. But it's all interconnected. I mean, the way you stay sane is also by making sure you move. You get out, you exercise, you do stuff. Movement is huge. There is nothing in the world that elevates your mood more quickly and more reliably than exercise. So if exercise were a pill, every doctor would be prescribing it. So make sure you go out there and move. Make sure you are doing meaningful work. Make sure that you are attending to your relationships. These are the things that will keep you in good stead and make you resilient, such that when something like this happens, when you're cooped up at home, when there's danger of disease and death and destruction, you're cool with it. You can be the person who helps lift other people up. So if you have questions, now's a really good time to go ahead and ask them. So go ahead and ask. and what is going on with your life. And the more you're willing to share what's going on, the more I can tailor these sessions to address them or to just address them right now. I mean, if you're having a difficult emotion, please let me know. You can send it to me privately. You can do it in the public chat. And that way I know what is up with you. And also remember that whenever you share, it's also an act of generosity, because whatever it is that you are experiencing, chances are very good that somebody else is experiencing them too. Right now, we're all in this together. Everybody's having a whole lot of really human experiences. So whether you're cooped up with just yourself, and that's a hard person to be with, whether you're with family and you love them, but my God, having them around all the time, whew, that's a challenge. Whether you're with someone you really don't like being around. So all these things, I hear you. These are challenging times, and these are novel experiences. And for that, you may need some novel techniques and new ways of doing things. So this is fantastic. Thank you for the kind words. And here we have a question. How do you stay confident and positive and compassionate at the same time in the world for the community? Discuss the combination. I'm not sure if I understand. So I'm going to ask Jane to explain. Let's see what we got here. Where are you, Jane? Jane, can you unmute yourself?
Yeah, I can unmute. Thank
you. Fantastic. I hear you, Jane. How you doing? So this is a great question. So elaborate. What do you mean by staying confident, positive,
and compassionate? Well, I feel like, yeah, well, maybe I wasn't able to articulate it writing, right? So I feel optimistic and positive because I feel like this is a big opening for consciousness and awareness. And so I feel positive, but I want to be compassionate at the same time. I don't want to be overly, I'm feeling like if I'm overly positive, people will, might, you know, take it like I'm not being sensitive or I'm not being compassionate. But I think if I just, maybe I'm answering it while I'm speaking about it, phrasing it and say, hey, I'm being compassionate, but we need to be optimistic and positive and doing our projects or, you know, giving our gifts or doing our sales at the same time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. So look, if you're even thinking about this, that means you already have a very strong sense of compassion and a theory of mind. You're already concerned about how other people feel. So you're probably not the kind of person who jumps into a funeral wearing like all glitter and dancing around going, woohoo, everybody, let's party, right? So right. That, I don't think that's the problem here. But you're worried that, oh, I'm a little too upbeat. Maybe these people can't handle it. So I think you're already pretty skilled at meeting people where they are. And also you don't seem like the kind of person who's like, hey, I'm going to call you and I'm going to lift your mood, even though you didn't ask for it. So meeting people where they are is the essence of compassion. And also just allowing people to come to you maybe and figuring out what they need and giving it to them. In the meantime, there is no reason to diminish your light. So if this is how you feel, that's fantastic. And you'd be surprised. Those people who are maybe not feeling the same amount of optimism and joy than you are, maybe what they're really doing is they're actually using you as an example. It's like, hey, wait, if she can do it, then maybe I can too. So think of yourself more as a source of potential inspiration than a source of annoyance. And that way, maybe you can even flourish some more.
Yeah, I like that. That sounds good. Because I'm leaning into people, giving them an opportunity and something good. And I do have the language down, and so just continue to be the beacon of light, like you said.
Yeah, and meet people where they are. And yeah, there's the old Zen saying, when the student is ready, the master will appear. So, you know, just let people come to you maybe. But at the same time, I think it's really important to reach out to friends, because right now people are feeling isolated. And for whatever reason, maybe they're habitual perfectionists, or maybe they're introverts and they're like, oh, I don't want to impose. So I think it's really important to actually put in the effort to reach out to friends when you're not hearing from them. At the same time, you can meet them where they are once you do reach out to them. So, yeah, I think you're doing great.
Okay, that was great. The meditation was great. Thank you. Practice the whole, you know, framework of it. That's good.
Thank you. Okay, great. Okay. So let's do a little muting thing. Fantastic. All right, more questions here. So that was a great question. So I really like the two exercises, feeling a lot lighter and the hurt from a recent breakup and the isolation from the lockdown and the lessened bit. I'll keep practicing the valuable techniques you've introduced us to. Okay, great. No question there. I love it. Fantastic. So these techniques work. So breakup, when are you more down than after a breakup? So these techniques really help. They help you manage the emotion. And they also make you wonder, hey, if I just did this thing that took 2 minutes and it made that whole emotion 90% lighter, just made it go away completely, how real was that to begin with? Is suffering necessary or is it kind of optional? And I like to think that suffering is optional. Pain has some very useful lessons to teach us. And when your body is in pain, it's signaling to some form of injury. It's like, hey, pay attention to this, right? But you know, if you broke up a week ago and it sucks, you don't need somebody to keep on telling you it still sucks. Oh, by the way, it's still sucking. Hey, it sucked even harder now. So you got it. You got the message. You can move on and maintain the information that was useful and keep it for later, as in, oh, maybe I shouldn't have hooked up with this guy who's just like all the other guys who've been bad for me. You can keep that information and move on beyond the pain. And this stuff works for a lot of heavier stuff too. So please feel free to use these techniques. My job is to make these available in the public domain. I mean, I'm not kidding when I tell you, this is like months of therapy that you can do for yourself. And it's cheaper than therapy. So there you go. All right, more questions I'm happy to answer. So today we went through the Wheel of Awareness. If you're just joining us right now, all of this will be available via audio and maybe even video. I'll make that available. The Wheel of Awareness is a super powerful meditation that is going to rock your world. And then we also talked about the kind of emotional ball technique, how to manage and reprocess challenging emotions and kind of make yourself feel lighter in the moment. And the more you do it, the more powerful it gets. Okay, good. Let's see. Goja. Hello, Goja. Chesh, yak shimash. I am deeply grateful. I have been working for a long time to become ready to open up for love and attracting meaningful relationship. I feel sad and hopeless. I feel as if I am even further to find my life partner due to the social distancing and isolation. Fantastic. Okay, there's no question in there. If you have a question specifically, then I can address that. But in the meantime, what you're experiencing is something that probably a lot of people are experiencing. So, I would like you to reframe this whole situation, not as something that's making it even more difficult for you to connect with your potential partner, but something that's going to be the ultimate catalyst for you to be able to find the person who is actually right for you, who's a good fit, a good match for you. Because a prerequisite for togetherness is solitude. All right, let's say that again, because it probably didn't make sense the first time. A prerequisite for togetherness is solitude. The question is, can you handle being by yourself? Because there is no time in your life where you're not gonna be by yourself. So if you can't stand being by yourself, how the hell do you expect somebody else to be able to stand being with you? Does that make sense? Okay, so you need to make your peace with being just you, being by yourself. Can you just be there, or are you just going to have crazy thoughts running around saying, oh, you're not good enough, oh, this, oh, that, oh, my God, this is awful, oh, why would anybody ever want to be with me? These thoughts happen, right? And when people become alone, these thoughts start to just rush in and you're thinking that's all there is in the world. So I don't know what the specific nature of your thoughts are, but for most humans, these thoughts are usually not hugely complimentary. For some strange reason, we're really good at the negative self-talk, but the positive self-talk, who knows where that went. So this is why we meditate. This is why we practice mindfulness. This is why you want to be alone for a while to figure out, who are you really, Goja? Who are you without the influence of other people? What do you stand for? What are your values? Look back on all the relationships you've had up to this point. Look at every single breakup you've had. why did those breakups happen? And if you make a list of why those breakups happened, you may find out that they all happened because somehow, in some way, some aspect of those relationships violated your own values. And now you know what your values are. And what you want to do is you want to make sure that the next one actually lines up with those values, because that's what really matters. People aren't these bright, shiny objects that we order online, contrary to popular belief and the modus operandi of apps like Tinder and Hinge and whatnot, okay? People are still multidimensional, incredibly complex creatures. Okay, so what you want to do is you want to take this opportunity, reframe it, and take stock. And, you know, eventually this will end. Most things come to an end. All things come to an end, good or bad. So then you'll be ready, and then you'll be much more discerning as to what kind of guy is actually aligned with who you are and who you want to be. And also practice being the buyer. Just be the person who's like, is this guy good for me or not? As opposed to, oh, will he like me or not? But I'm so great, I try so hard. No, be the buyer. I don't care if you feel you're qualified to be the buyer, but hey, apparently the other guy, he's not qualified either, and he's assuming the stance. So why don't you be the buyer instead? And that way you have a lot more power in your relationships. Okay, so let's see. Okay, great, fantastic. And very funny. I feel I have overdosed being myself. Being by myself. I totally hear you. ODing right here, right now, even as we speak. And yet, when you do this meditation stuff, it tends to make it a lot easier. Suddenly, the isolation, if you reframe it as splendid isolation or solitude, it becomes a hell of a lot more manageable. Okay, great. So we have another one right here. Private. So I'm working overtime, online too much, and can't get work out of my head, and then cannot sleep. Meanwhile, I cannot keep up with social events or even news online. I am burnt out, and it manifests physically as ergo, I'm not quite sure what that means, and sleep issues. I have prioritized exercise a fair amount and tried to rebalance things and be grateful, but it is not enough. I feel a sense of being underwater and unbalanced. Any advice on how to rebalance and heal physical pain, sleep? Okay, stuff, a whole bunch of stuff. So the first thing we do is we work on our metaphor. So I hear the metaphor of underwater. Okay, so underwater means you're drowning, means you're dying. And if you're doing this with your computer right now, I'm pretty impressed, because normally a computer would short circuit and you wouldn't be able to do this. So I'm gonna guess you're actually not underwater. If you use metaphors like underwater, under siege, under fire, your brain and your body has a way of believing that, okay? So if your body and mind are willing to believe the destructive, non-helpful metaphors, well, guess what? They're probably willing to accept other metaphors that are perhaps more uplifting, perhaps more useful. So what's a more useful metaphor we could use here? So would you like to open up your microphone so we can talk about this? That might be easier. If you don't want to, that's perfectly fine too, but I feel like a conversation would move things forward a lot faster. Yes, Alina?
Sure.
Fantastic. Okay, good. So tell
me. I did hear the story in the beginning, and I try not to think thoughts like underwater. I don't usually think that. I'm usually thinking, oh, I just need to prioritize my tasks or just pick what's most important. But at the end of the day, I still kind of feel there are these to-do things in my head running through my head, and I just have so much trouble sleeping because I still feel a great weight on me for some reason.
Okay, great, fantastic. So I'm hearing more metaphors here. We got weight, we got balance and unbalance, we got running, and tell me also, do you have a regular meditation practice?
I have not implemented it. I do long stretching sessions, dance-related stretching sessions, much like yoga, that do help tremendously.
Okay.
But I would like to.
That's a long way of saying, no, I do not have a regular meditation practice.
Yeah.
And that's true of most people. And I'm here to tell you that this is no longer like a fashionable thing. this is no longer something that, you know, happens on the West Coast in certain enclaves in Santa Monica and Venice and maybe in New York, and there's like cute little studios that do that. This is not a trend. This is not a fad. This is your life. This is absolutely essential. Okay, so this is exercise. So you are going to encounter staircases in your life. And if you're so out of shape that you can't go up that staircase, you're going to miss out on a lot in life. So what we want to do is we want to be fit such that when we encounter that staircase or encounter that hike, we're ready to go up it. So I'd strongly encourage you to start with a regular meditation practice, because what you're saying is that there's not a lot of space inside your head. And this is what meditation does. It opens up the space and allows you to access that expansiveness that's already there, that's always been there. And we have these metaphors, we have these stories that say, oh, I'm under siege or I'm underwater. And these are in contradiction to the actual natural state of the mind, which is of expansiveness. So my guess is that the more you do this kind of meditation, and starting out with even 5 minutes a day is helpful, the more you're going to be able to manage all the other things. Because I really like that fitness metaphor, because once you become fitter and fitter, suddenly going around the block is easy, whereas before it was hard. Going up a flight of stairs, easy. 2 flights of stairs, no problem. 5, no problem. So I was going to mention this at the beginning of this talk, and somehow it slipped my mind, but there are 2 possible solutions to any problem we have. And you mentioned a bunch of problems like, oh, you know, I'm busy, I got a bunch of stuff, and there's 2 possible solutions. One is to address that problem at the level it was created. So I would say, hey, you know, there's this great book called Getting Things Done, by David What's-His-Face, and you can use those suggestions and maybe make some to-do lists and do some time management, and boom, there you go. Suddenly, all these problems will be taken care of. You'll be much more able to manage them, right? The second solution is to become the kind of person for whom this is not a problem. Okay, I'm going to repeat that. So the first solution is to try to solve the problem at the level that it is, and the second is to become the kind of person for whom this problem simply does not exist. Okay, so if you are a fit person, then going up a flight of stairs is not a problem for you. It's not even on your radar. Okay, and if you have a regular meditation practice such that at any point of the day, you can access that space of equanimity, you can access that space of joy, of expansive, of pure energy, then a lot of these things are going to seem a lot more manageable than they were before. And we're going to do a quick little exercise right now, which is going to be ridiculous in its just maybe simple-mindedness, but potentially quite effective. And one of the metaphors that you used is that you feel like things are out of balance. You are unbalanced. Okay, good. So what I want you to do is stand up. I can't see you, but you can see me. Stand up and go ahead and take one leg away. Maybe go like this. And if you do a lot of yoga, it's probably still maintaining your balance, but you can feel the fidgeting inside your foot, the fasciculation of the muscles, and it's not entirely balanced. You can maybe, oh, there you are. You close your eyes, like, oh, wow. Closing your eyes, that makes you really unbalanced, right? Woo, that's crazy. And then suddenly, what do? Boom, put your feet together. Stand straight with your perfect yoga posture. Root your feet all the way down to the ground so you're feeling that your feet are going all the way to the center of the earth and you're bringing up the energy of the core of the earth all the way through you, and boom, you are super solid, super balanced. And from this state of balance, let's press your left thumb and forefinger together like that. Anchor in the balance, feel the balance. Do your challenges seem more manageable or less manageable? A little better?
Yeah, it helps you harness some control.
Yeah, there you go. So you just took the metaphor that was kind of taking your energy away, your power away, and now you have reconfigured it such that you own the metaphor. It's like, boom, I am balanced. And there is nothing in the world that can contradict that right now. You are balanced. So from this center, you can radiate out into being much more capable of managing whatever it was that was bugging you. Does that make sense? All right. Fantastic. So if we don't have any more questions, I'm going to close the session here. So feel free to put them here in the chat window. The book that I recommended is called Aware. I'm going to put it over here, by Daniel Siegel. Aware by Daniel Siegel. Aware by Daniel Siegel. He is the man. And he has a bunch of meditations online. You can just look up the Wheel of Awareness, the Wheel of Awareness. And it's great stuff. Or you can just listen to my version, which has my own particular flavor to it. It's all good stuff. All right. Good times, people. Thank you so much for your attention. And remember, you can make yourself an epicenter of equanimity and calm and joy and spread that out to the rest of the world. The more you teach it to others, the better you get at it and the better you are going to feel. In fact, it's probably the fastest way to raise your own spirits is to go ahead and raise somebody else's spirits. So with that, I leave you to a fabulous weekend. Go forth, flourish, conquer, and serve as best you can and give your gift to the world. Thank you, everybody. Let me unmute so you can all say something.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Glad you can make it. Have a great, great rest of your weekend.